CRB. Good morning to the law and you. This is Margaret Miller from the Bell Legal Group. You can call me on 5520-8888 with your legal questions. We have an early starter this morning. Good morning, Christine. What can I do to help you?
Oh, hello, Margaret.
Yes.
Yes, my name's Christine. It's just in regard to a fence which is on top of a retaining wall. I live on the bottom side of a hill, and my neighbour, who is on the top side, the original owner of the house built a 2-metre retaining crib wall so that he could have a level backyard. And on top of that retaining wall, he put a pool fence, a galvanised pool fence along. Mm-hmm. And this is going back 30-odd years. Well, the retaining wall and the fence are still there, and the place has been sold quite a few times. The present neighbours want to take the fence down and put a collar bond fence on top of the wall. And I was just wondering, do I fork out for the collar bond fence or...
Christine, what the fencing provisions provide is that if your neighbour wants to build a fence on a boundary, then you have to contribute half the cost of the type of fence that is normal for your area. So if a lot of people have paling fences, it's a paling fence. If it's colour bond fences, it's probably going to be a colour bond one. But if it's not a colour bond fence and your neighbour desperately wants a colour bond fence, you can say to them, I will pay for half of the paling fence, and you can pay the extra for the colour bond if that's what you want. That's what I did with one of my neighbours quite a while ago.
Right. And that's regardless of the fence that's there, is still okay?
Well, if there's nothing wrong with the fence, then you can say, I'm quite happy with the fence that's there, provided it's not dilapidated. If it's a pool fence, is it the neighbour that has the pool?
The neighbour has the pool on the uphill side. Yeah.
Sure. Now, what has to happen is the pool fence has to comply with pool fencing regulations. So if it does, if there's nothing wrong with the fence, then you can say, I don't really want a new fence. I'm quite happy with what's there. And if they want to put up a brand new fence, they can then do that at their own expense.
Right. Now, the other question is in regard to the retaining wall. It's a criblock cement retaining wall,
mm-hmm.
and it's about 90 foot long. But the area in front of the pool is basically falling apart, and I think it's because the pool water is draining down through that part of the crib wall.
Through the retaining wall, yeah.
Yes.
Well, legally speaking, whoever has the benefit of the retaining wall is responsible for maintaining it. So if the fence is starting to crumble, then because your neighbour has the benefit of the retaining wall, then it's their obligation to fix it. Now, of course, if you get into a bun fight with them, you can't take it to QCAT because it's not a normal fencing matter. Retaining walls, unfortunately, have to be fought out in the magistrates' court.
Okay, then. Right. Thank you very much, Margaret. I appreciate the advice.
You're very welcome. We have quite a few people who have problems with fences and trees and all those sorts of neighbourhood things that cause dramas. But, of course, a bit of common sense will resolve the issue. And, of course, if you're not sure, you can consult your local neighbourhood community legal centre and they'll tell you what your rights and obligations are. The main thing to remember, of course, is have a chat to your neighbours and try and sort it out as good neighbours do.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Christine. Lovely to talk to you. It's The Law and You with Margaret Miller from Bell Legal Group. If you call me on 5520-8888, I can help you with your legal questions. We may take a message from a sponsor while we're waiting.
Have you been thinking of selling your property now the market's heated up? Then you need to call Lucy Cole Prestige Properties, the trusted name in real estate. One of their mature, licensed agents are available right now to help. Call them 7 days a week on 55921-288. They're proud 4CRB sponsors.
Wish you can turn back time? Call our sponsor, Mayo Clinic Broadbeat, today for a comprehensive skin assessment with time-proven solutions. Mayo Clinic Broadbeat, 0423 489 838, catering for both men and women.
Welcome back to The Law and You with Margaret Miller from Bell Legal Group. We have a call from Robert. Good morning, Robert. What can I do to help you?
Yes, I just wanted to know about power of attorney.
Yes.
Okay. Now, who has to be the attorney? Like, what sort of person do they have to be?
Well, Robert, it's a person that you would trust to hold your wallet. Basically, right. The attorney can do whatever you can legally do. So you right. need to be sure that it's someone you trust. In a lot of cases, people choose a trusted friend or a family member. But there have been cases where there are elderly people making powers of attorney. Sometimes their children have done the wrong thing by them. So sometimes people yeah. will choose their lawyer to be their attorney. But it has to be someone that you trust.
All right. So like, I've got the form in front of me. Like, in the last page, the people that are, what do you call them?
The attorneys.
The attorneys at the, like your children, say it's your children or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And who's supposed to witness it? Does it have to be a lawyer to witness it?
Well, when you make the power of attorney, the section at the beginning of the power of attorney form where you sign has to be witnessed by a JP, Commissioner for Declarations, or a lawyer, because they have to sign a statement to say that you know what you're doing and you've got capacity to make the decision about appointing an attorney. Once you've signed the power of attorney, then the attorneys that you've chosen sign at, that they accept the position as your attorney. Their signatures don't have to be witnessed.
They don't have to be. No. That's another question I was going to ask. They don't have to be witnessed.
No, it's just yours, but they do have to put the date on that they sign it.
Right, okay. And they don't all, like with your children, they don't all have to be signed on the same date, do they?
No, they can sign at any time at all. But their position as an attorney does not start until they sign and date the document.
All right. Thank you very much for that.
You're welcome. Thank you, Robert. We have a call from Robin. Good morning, Robin. What can I do to help you?
Hello.
Yes, Robin.
Good morning, this is Margaret.
Yes, it is.
Am I through to Margaret?
Hello,
Margaret. Sorry, didn't realise I was through to you so fast.
They're so efficient, Margaret, here at 4CRB. What can I do to help you?
I'm very glad for the opportunity. Margaret, I'm considering getting back into being an owner in a body corporate situation. I have had some bad experiences with that in the past. And the property, the unit that I'm considering, has a fairly extensive piece of exclusive use, subtropical planting, well-established, long-established,
yes,
including very
your,
tall palms.
Is that your unit that you're going to get exclusive use to?
The unit that I'm considering
excellent.
Has this. It's actually bigger than the quite small unit. The size of the exclusive use is actually bigger than the tiny little unit.
It sounds like a good deal then.
Yes, it's the pros and cons that I'm interested in. And the little research that I've done so far on the government site suggests to me, Margaret, that the real crunch point is I need to cite the bylaws and the paperwork.
Yes, you have to be given a copy. You have to be given a copy. If you're buying into a body corporate, it's always good to get legal advice to make sure that you're getting what you think you're getting and that you know the pros and the cons, including the bylaws, which are very important because that's what you can and can't do.
Thank you, because it's not just a sort of, what I understand, Margaret, it's not just a sort of a general formula that all exclusive users, you can do this and you can't do that. It's quite specific to what was agreed and set out in the first place. For example, the agent talks about you could probably fence it in, but you couldn't turn it into a veggie garden, you know, things like that. And I'm thinking, I need to know, especially since it's at an area, it's a very well-established tall palms section where people who are resident walk past.
Well,
but if I start fencing that or thinning it out, even if I'm allowed to, my guess is that may
they might get cranky,
be problematic and get,
yes.
get... Exactly, yeah.
Well, all I can say, Robin, is that real estate agents don't make very good lawyers. You are best
you.
Off... You're best
Thank you, I'm
off,
glad you're saying it, but yes.
When you're doing your conveyance, go and see a lawyer or a conveyancer and have them go through and explain everything to you. That's the only way you're going to find out what you can and can't do. And that way you'll have a little bit of certainty.
So the extra element to that, thank you, Margaret, I would if I got to the conveyancing stage, I'm at the working it out beforehand, could I approach the on-site, am I allowed to approach the on-site manager, or indeed if she does, if an external management firm does the sort of bookwork and accounting, take it to them even if I have to pay a fee to cite that particular one that governs this exclusive use?
Well, if, you know,
or,
if you're
or do
interested...
I have to have gone to contract?
If you're interested in buying, they should be quite happy in giving you a copy of the body corporate rules. There's, you know, I don't think there would be an issue about that.
So,
do you know anyone who lives there? Do you know anyone who lives there?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, but I did think of just popping around and chatting to the lady next door.
Yes.
Sort of.
Yes, but don't take your legal advice from any of these people.
No, absolutely not. Yes. No. That's why I'm talking to you. Start with the agent.
I'm losing you, Robin. I'm sorry. You'll have to stand on one leg or something to make your phone better.
That's better.
Yes. Yes. Look, I suggest if there is an external body corporate manager, contact them, say, yes, I'm interested in buying. Can I get a copy of the body corporate rules? And I'm sure they'll be happy to help you. There might be a small charge or they may give it to you for nothing, depending on who they are.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Well, good luck. I wish you well.
Thank you so much.
Our next caller is Brian. Hello, Brian. What can I do to help you? Hello?
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning, Brian. What can I do to help you?
Oh, hello, Margaret. I'm bringing up, I've got an elderly neighbour who has got a lot of trees and that on his property. Now, he's incapable of looking after them, but now all the roots have come under the fence, under the path, and are getting around the footings of our house.
Oh, dear.
I know the council are only interested in, like, tree branches and stuff like that.
Yes.
And the family sort of aren't really interested in helping.
Well, I think what you need to do is you need to... Does he have an attorney or a family member who helps him with his legal things?
Oh, I'm not.
Or can you
sure
chat to him? Is he able to be chatted to?
Yeah.
Well, then I think you need...
You talk to him and he...
Well, you need to say to him, unfortunately, your roots are coming through and they're interfering with my property. I'd really like you to do something about it. And, you know, together you can organise doing something. The responsibility is his if it's adversely affecting your property. And if he says, take a hike, I'm not interested, then you may have to make an application to QCAT and seek an order that he removes the roots and puts in tree barriers so that your property isn't bothered by these terrible things.
Yeah.
Now, right, you can legally cut back anything that comes onto your property. There isn't a problem with doing that, but that's not going to fix the problem if they keep coming and growing under your house.
Yeah.
I think you need to talk to the neighbour and you need to say you've got to put in some root barriers to stop your trees getting underneath our house.
Yeah. Righto then. Thanks, okay. Margaret.
Thanks, Brian. I wish you well with that and I hope you sort it out soon. This is The Law and You with Margaret Miller. Our next caller is Rex. Good morning, Rex. Good morning, Rex. What can I do to help you?
Yeah, Margaret, talking about executors of your will.
Yes.
When the situation arises that they're needed, do they have the right to say, I can't do it now?
Yes, they can. If an executor is unable or unwilling to act, and there could be a number of reasons why they don't want to do it, then they can just say, no, sorry, I don't want to do it. This is why if you do a will, it's always good to have a reserve. You appoint someone as your executor, and if they can't do it, then you've got someone else standing by.
I see. Now, if you're talking about family members, your daughters, can any one of them... say, well, I will replace them when they're not named?
Yes, if there's no executor named, there is...
No.
If the executor isn't going to do the executor's job and you don't have a reserve executor, then there is a priority list in the Succession Act of people who can put their hands up and say that they'll do it. So it could be your wife, it could be your children, it could be something like that. If there's more than one child, they pretty well have to agree, otherwise they can fight it out between themselves.
Yeah, I see. Okay. Right. Thank you kindly.
You're welcome, Rex. I hope it works out well for you. It's part of the problems that people have when they're doing things to help their children legally. There was a recent New South Wales court case where a father decided he would help his son, who had just got married, to buy into a home. Now, they were going to borrow money from the bank because, of course, houses are very expensive down in Sydney. So Dad had to do a statutory declaration to say that the money he was giving them was a gift. At the same time, he had the family lawyer draw up a loan document, which was signed by his son and the daughter-in-law, to say that it was a loan and they had to pay it back. Now, of course, when the marriage went belly up, the daughter ran to the family court and said, but the money was a gift. Look at this statutory declaration. The matter also went to the New South Wales Supreme Court on appeal, where the court upheld the fact that it was a loan because Dad had done his homework properly, he'd talked to his lawyer, he'd drawn up the documents properly, and it was clear that the daughter-in-law knew about the loan. In fact, she'd signed and she'd agreed to it. This is something you need to be very, very careful about. A lot of parents want to help their children buy into a home, but if you don't document it properly, if things go wrong, and for example, if your children are involved in a business and their creditors move in, unless you've got the loan properly documented, the money could be lost to both the parent and the children. It's always a good idea when you're thinking about money and children to have a quick talk to your lawyer, just to talk about what could possibly go wrong so that you avoid the problems. This is The Law and You with Margaret Miller, 5520 8888. We'll take a message from our sponsor.
Are you buying a new TV? There are over 80 different TV models on the market right now. Daunting, isn't it? Brockies TV asks the right questions. We explore size options and bypass the jargon. There are three things to consider when buying a new TV. Is it a good picture? Is it easy to use? And does it fit our budget? Consider asking Brockies TV for advice. That's Brockies TV, 1-800-588-688.
Taylor Law and Conveyancing is a law firm like no other. We are an authentic country practice complete with rose garden and freshly laid eggs. You'll find us nestled in the beautiful Talabudjara Valley and yet only 12 minutes from Burleigh and Robina. Taylor Law and Conveyancing practice in Queensland and New South Wales and offer services in the area of family law, deceased estates, wills, powers of attorney and conveyancing. Relax a while, drive a country mile and get the tender loving care you deserve at tlclaw.com.au or call us on 5533 8833.
Another sponsor.
We're back to The Law and You with Margaret Miller from Bell Legal Group, 5520 8888, and a very good morning to Carolyn Taylor at Taylor Law, whom I met recently at a function. She's the most amazing woman and a very good lawyer. Recent news from the ACCC is that they've given Apple a big bite. Now, this has been coming a long time. Recently, when Apple customers upgraded their phones, they found that they turned into a brick. And the reason for that is there'd been a part put into the program where if you had your phone repaired by someone else and not Apple, your phone stopped working. So the ACCC was fined $9 million for this little bit of hanky-panky, and they provided an undertaking that they would not do it anymore, which they've stopped. And as well as that, very good news for Apple customers. If the Apple phone fails and is covered by the Australian Consumer Law, you don't have to take a refurbished phone anymore. Apple kept offering refurbished phones rather than new ones. They now have to provide a new phone if the Apple iPhone fails. So if your phone fails and you're in with Apple and they say, we have a fabulous refurbished phone for you, you can say, I know what the Australian Consumer Law says, I'm entitled to a new one. And that's what you should get. Apple had a $9 million lesson, and I don't think they're going to do it again. We have a call from Peter. Good morning, Peter. What can I do to help you?
Peter here.
Yes.
Just a ticklish subject, perhaps. I was talking to some people I know who lost a son through suicide.
Yes.
And they touched on... I didn't pursue the issue because it was such a damn problem issue. There's something to do with his assets and wills confiscated because of the suicide. Is there something wrong in there, or have I missed something?
I don't know how that would happen.
That's all right. I just wasn't sure, and I didn't want to pursue it because of such a subject.
I'd have to know a little bit more about that. But the only place that I can imagine that a suicide may lose part of their estate is if they had an insurance policy, because most insurance policies have a period of time in which if you commit suicide, you don't get anything. So that's the only thing that I know about. Otherwise, if someone commits suicide, their estate is still what it is. If they have a will, the will acts as the administration of their estate. If they don't have a will, then they're dealt with as an intestacy, and there is a list of people in the Succession Act as to where the money goes. So I don't understand what the confiscation aspect is. Well, you'd need to tell me more.
Well, I don't know more, to be quite honest. I just mentioned that there was a problem, and I didn't pursue it because it's such a touchy subject, and I just thought I'd see if, you know, and if you haven't heard of any such thing, well, then it's probably wrong or a one-off.
Well, it's not an automatic thing that I would know about, but then, you know, I don't know. If there were more facts that you could tell me, I might be able to think about it. But the only consideration that I would have would be an insurance policy might not be effective.
That might be what I would talk. I didn't push because, you know, very touchy subject.
But this
is... No, I just thought there would have been some standardised thing. Well, look, thanks, Margaret. That's good enough. Freed me up a little bit.
Thank you, Peter. And we have the last call from David. Good morning, David. What can I do to help you? Hello?
Morning, Margaret.
Good morning, David. What can I do to help you?
Just a statement about batteries, which are rising in price at an astronomical rate, and their warranties are shortening to such a degree that I've just replaced the battery in a car. The battery had the warranty was still in existence by 1 month.
Yes.
The new replacement was twice the price of the old battery.
Mm-hmm.
But the firm insisted that the warranty on the new battery, replacing the old, would only last the length of the previous warranty, which is therefore 1 month. Now, to get that into monetary terms,
that seems a bit weird.
The previous battery was about $200. The new battery is about $400. So one is paying $400. Well, in this case, nothing, because it's a replacement.
It seems a bit weird. Yeah, it seems a bit weird to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if it's a brand new battery, shouldn't it last more than a month?
Well, precisely, particularly at twice the price.
And you're paying for it. Are you paying for it or getting it for nothing?
No, I got this as a replacement.
Good.
For nothing.
All right.
But I have two cars that are identical.
Yes.
And they both have similar batteries in them.
Yes.
And I was alerted to the problem of price when the RACQ replaced the battery in one of the cars because it was an RACQ battery in the first place.
Yes.
And it had a lengthier warranty on it than the battery in the other car. But the problem is that the RACQ price was again twice the cost of the prior battery.
Well, the answer to that, David, is that you look around and you buy your batteries from the people who give you the best deal. And don't forget the Australian Consumer Law, which I love. It says that no matter what you pay for something, it should last as long as something that you pay that amount of money for lasts.
I agree.
So if your battery carks it after a month's time, I'd be going back and saying this should have lasted more than a month. Because obviously if you have a new battery, that should be the case. We're running to the end of the program now,
okay,
David.
Margaret.
So I'm going to have to say good morning to you. It's been an absolute pleasure answering your questions. And John Fradgley will be back with you next week, and he'll be happy and rested from his trip to Canada. This is The Law and You, Margaret Miller. Good morning.